We begin with technology and we welcome commentator Paul Matthews. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I'm really good. Paul is chief executive of CIO Studio. Where do we start today?
Well, there's a few things going on at the moment. One of them is China's facing what could probably is the largest data breach in history, and this is a big one because it's not only because of its size, but the type of data that's being released as well, and that includes government records of over a billion Chinese citizens that have just appeared online on the dark web. Now, an anonymous hacker called ChinaDan has listed 23 terabytes. For those not in tech, that translates to roughly a heck of a lot of data on the dark web, as I mentioned. The data was from the Shanghai National Police database. So not only does it include heaps and heaps of details about individuals, but also all their police records and who knows what else is in there as well. That's around, you know, when we think about a billion people, that's around 70% of China's population.
Two-thirds of the population. It's mind-blowing.
It's massive. Absolutely, absolutely massive. And, you know, these sort of leaks, when it's a government data leak, it's always a little bit worse because, you know, the reality is that you don't have a choice whether to give them data. You know, the Shanghai National Police Service is going to collect this data whether you like it or not. It's got all the details that you really don't want to get out there. So when these sort of leaks happen, it's really seen as one of the kind of worst kind. You know, there's commercial data that sometimes goes out. That's terrible. It's very bad for shareholders, very bad for companies, very bad for customers and things. But this level of leak is a real shocker. It looks like it's real. So there have been some snippets that have been released for testing. They've been searched up by journalists and researchers. People that are on that list have been identified and they're real people and real information. So it looks like a real deal. Hasn't been fully confirmed by the Chinese government yet, may never be, but it certainly looks like the real deal.
So if it's police files, presumably 70% of the population doesn't have a criminal record, but we know in this particular state there are very strict rules and there's a lot of information carried about citizens and a lot of observation of citizens. Are we talking about data like names, addresses and any relevant kind of police notations, or are we talking about biometric data, for goodness sake? Do we know?
We don't know fully yet. We do know that it has full details. So they obviously have a national ID in China as well. So national ID, contact details, names, addresses, and also billions of police records, quote unquote. So so some of that is going to be, you know, criminal convictions and things. But as you say, there's also a chunk of information that actually most police forces and most governments collect. But China in particular does a very comprehensive job of collecting information about its citizens. So, you know, we'll wait to see the full extent of it, but this looks like a massive one. And as I say, the largest leak that's ever happened worldwide.
So, criminal hack, we suspect, or I mean, it's often it would be an interesting state actor that made such a move.
But it's a real facepalm moment, actually. So what looks like has happened is a developer who is in some way involved with the database, essentially some way involved with the system, posted a blog post on a development community in China. So this is quite common. Often developers who are working on a particular technology, it's not necessarily related to the police in this case, just the technology that's being used, will post a detailed sort of blog post about how they've used it and how they've accessed it, etc., etc. Now, the mistake that they made, allegedly, is that one of the code snippets that they posted had the full credentials to log into part of the system in comments. So it never should have been there in the first place. It's probably some testing data that never got removed, but the reality was it was there. So somebody reviewing that seen that and thought, hang on, this doesn't look right. Let's take a look. And managed to get into an application called Elastic Search, which is being used by the police there. Kind of think of that as a search engine for data. So essentially they got into the back end of Google, if you want, if you think about it in search engine terms. But this application called Elasticsearch, and from there they're basically into everything. So very sloppy, if true. Quite a, you know, in some respects, an easy thing to happen, but something that never should have happened. And it looks like this whole leak has occurred because of this one little action from one person without really sort of thinking about it.
Okay. Next story, please.
Well, Agritech, I thought it was good to mention that the New Zealand Agritech sector is absolutely going from strength to strength. And a new report's just come out that's talking about the sector, talks about some of the challenges as well. So we all know that there are massive labour shortages in the agriculture sector, along with many other. Others, a few other issues around getting product to market and all that sort of stuff. But the tech side of things, the agritech side of things, is going absolutely gangbusters. So this is the TIN Agritech Insights report, and it's found that from the companies that they monitor, the agritech industry has grown about 16% year on year. And this isn't just a sort of one-off growth. This is a sustained growth that we've been seeing year after year in the space. And what's really interesting about this is not just the highlight sort of number, but when you dive into it a little bit deeper, you find that, you know, almost all of the sector is growing, but it's the smaller innovative players that are growing the most. So those that have revenue under, say, 50 million have got a growth of about 30% year on year. And again, this is sustained. It's happening year after year after year. The bigger players are still growing, but at a much more modest 7.7% for those over 200 million. So it's really the innovative startups, slightly larger than startups, those sort of smaller players that are growing massively. And it's really being led by a new wave of startups. So there's people focusing on livestock tracking drone technology, for instance, river monitoring, you know, efficiency monitoring on farm, livestock monitoring, automation, a whole bunch of, each of them solving one small but quite significant problem in the agritech space. And I think what's really great about this industry is most of it is going overseas. So in terms of the sales, so 51% of revenue that's generated from agritech is actually being exported and taking Kiwi technology to the world, and of course doing wonders for our economy as well.
All right, it is good to hear good news, and we've, you know, interviewed some of those who are involved. It's ripe, if you pardon the appalling pun, it was unintended. It's absolutely ripe for the use of problem-solving technology, and it's, I suppose it is logical that a country like this, so agriculturally focused and with a flourishing tech sector, would put the two together. What is sort of driving the growth?
Well, New Zealand has traditionally been quite strong in the agritech space. And as you say, a lot of it is because we've got such a strong agriculture background. So it kind of makes sense. But what we've been seeing is quite a high level of investment, seven-figure investment, so in the millions, in a number of startups. And these are companies that have come out of some of our universities. They're some you know, individuals that have, you know, studied something as part of a qualification or a degree or a research project, turned it into a commercial offering. So, you know, companies like ProTag, which is a smart air tag for livestock, and not only does it track livestock, every single cow, for example, moving around on the farm, but it also detects illness and things really, really early. So if a cow is starting to get sick, they can identify which cow even before there's any physical signs, pull them out and stop the other animals getting unwell. You know, Fruitometry, fruit scanning company, they raised 2.6 million just recently, and again they scan fruit to make sure that when we are sending our sort of highest quality fruit, that it's all similar shapes, without having to get into all of the kind of you know, other ways of getting perfect fruit that aren't so well looked upon within New Zealand. So scanning, finding the best fruit, setting them aside, making sure that everything's the right size and shape and level of ripeness and all that sort of stuff. You know, Cropsy is another one, a tracking system that analyzes every single plant on an orchard. So if you think about that in a wine context, every vine being monitored to see which ones actually need water, which ones have caught a disease, which ones are not growing as fast as they could be. So again, that the orchardist can act on that and make a difference. And again, they've just raised 1.5 million as well. There's heaps more examples of this. But again, when you kind of think about the way this technology is being used within the agriculture agriculture sector, you can start to see the types of returns that farmers and orchardists and others are getting from using this technology. It's making a massive difference.
Now, the big tech companies are taking an absolute hammering in the global equities markets, stock markets, and it is an example, I guess, of what goes up comes down and what goes up a lot comes down a lot. What are the driving forces here?
Yeah, that's right, and it's quite massive. I mean, as we all know, the share markets are taking a bit of a hammering around the world anyway, but these tech stocks, honestly, they're at the front end of it. They're getting absolutely nailed. Amazon, so they've dropped 35% in the last quarter of its value, and when you think about a company like Amazon that's massive, that's, you know, we're talking, overall, we're talking trillions of dollars. Tesla, so Tesla's kind of been a bit of a guiding light for the market. They've dropped 38% in the last quarter. Facebook, under their Meta name now, just recently changed in terms of their stock listing, you know, dropped 27%. In their case, that was following a 34% drop in the previous quarter. So, you know, when you add those two together, it's pretty massive. You know, Google's not exempt. Alphabet, which is Google's kind of umbrella company, they dropped another 22%. So the market as a whole fell around 16%, but the tech stocks were absolutely the ones that have been nailed the most. And you see that through the NASDAQ as well, which is one of the big listing or one of the big markets in the states that focuses on tech stocks. There's a number of reasons around why this is happening that have been floated. One of them is a lack of earnings. So there's a lot of competition going, and you look at, you know, companies like Netflix, for example, they've kind of got to a point where they've reached a peak, or the market views that they've reached a peak and are starting to drop now. And of course, you know, tech stocks, one of the funny things about them and the way that they're valued is they're not necessarily valued based on earnings today or you know, asset base or anything like that, any of the sort of traditional methods. They're valued based on scale and their ability to continue to scale faster than other other companies. And that's something that tech can bring to a market. But by the same token, when they're not doing the scaling, when they're starting to kind of plateau a little bit, starting to drop off, that's when they get absolutely nailed. Interest rates, they're still lower than New Zealand's currently, but the US Fed's lifting rates and they've indicated they're going to keep doing it. And of course, when rates go up, that puts additional pressure on that scale. If these companies aren't scaling, interest rates are going up, people will find that they are getting more money by putting their money elsewhere with significantly less risk. So that's not the cause, but it's certainly a catalyst to what's happening. And the other thing, which I think is true with any market, and especially in the tech space at the moment, is, you know, they're falling because people think they're going to fall. You know, markets, people invest based on what they think is going to happen. If people think it's going to fall, that creates that fall because people then pull out, and then more people see it, and then all of a sudden the shares are in free fall. So, you know, there's been a lot of media coverage about the tech side of the market dropping, and that's caused an element of this as well. So, you know, a number of factors in this. It's hopefully not going to continue because it really is trillions of real dollars from real people. But, you know, when you see some of them, the trends are coming out of the pandemic. You know, shares like Netflix and Zoom, you know, they're dropping right down as people are back to work and using different technologies, and the whole kind of usage of these tools has changed.
Speaking of uses of technologies and Zoom and capacity for New Zealand, gosh, we pushed the envelope, didn't we, during the lockdowns, but we managed to have enough cable capacity, internet cable capacity. We've talked about the new cable linking New Zealand, Australia and the US. The Herald's reporting it's just gone live.
Yeah, that's right. So that's the Southern Cross Next cable. And it's really quite, going back to the pandemic, we did an incredible job as a country and the infrastructure in our country and getting through that. You know, a point where, and really the matter of a few days, everybody started working, well, not everybody, a lot of people started working from home. The demands on our capacity shot through the roof, but we were able to handle it. So, you know, we did incredibly well. What this cable is about is making sure that stays that way. And it's effectively giving us significantly more capacity now. But of course, the original Southern Cross cable was intended to run out at about 2030 by memory. So this is really setting us up for the future. The technology that's been going into cabling has been going through the roof in recent times as well. So we're seeing a really significant increase in capacity, but most importantly, making sure that it stays that way and that we have resilience as a country with our international access, and that we can continue to grow as you know, new uses are found for technology and for data.
Thanks very much. Paul Matthews is Chief Executive of CIO Studio.